All right, let's move right into it. It's the Men's Mental Health Show. Good morning, everyone out there, to our listeners locally here in the mountains, across Australia and abroad. It's Brad Spillane. We've got a pretty good show lined up for you today. I just want to say a quick thanks to our two sponsors, All Manufacturing Personnel, Recruitment and Labour Hire for the manufacturing industry. Give Craig a call, 0416 700 870 for all your staffing solutions, or myself, 0404 077 666. And a big thanks to Mounties Group as well, Dale Hunt. The wonderful things they're doing down there, I think they've bought three, or he's bought three, built three CareFlight helicopters and doing some wonderful things. He has his own sort of healthcare for members of Mounties Group, where they'll pick people up, take them to the doctors, get their medications and do whatever else. So they're doing some terrific things down there. And I think we sort of put a bit of a cloud over RSL clubs and what they do, but it's also too the amount of things they give back to the community
very good.
Socially. So thanks. Yeah, right. Well, I've been looking forward to this show because we've done a few promos, of course, for Pam. We've got Pam Khan here today from Rotary down at Blacktown City Centre. But I'll say, first of all, quick morning to Boatster. Boat, how's your weekend? A very long one, wasn't it?
It was a long one. My son came up with his girlfriend, Bridget. And as always, a good catch-up. He's 30 and... they're both a lovely couple, and Josh and I played badminton on Sunday, and everybody loves it when father and son are on the court together having a thrash out. He's taller than I am. You know, well, I think that's typical, isn't it? The father shrink and the son's actually just achieved their full height, and he towers over me. That was a really, really lovely thing. And then Annette had her...
she had the exhibition on.
Exhibition opening down at Braemar Gallery, and there was some great... six artists exhibiting on the theme of climate change, COVID, the challenges that we face in terms of actually being a community, and you know, thinking about where are we heading and what changes do we need to make in order to actually get to our destination in a reasonable enough space. So the art reflects all of that, and the opening was lovely. Very good speeches. And the vino was, you know, reasonable as well. So I had two glasses, and that made me loquacious. So
you'll get used to this. Good on you, mate, and good on Annette.
Yeah, absolutely. Kudos. No, she sold a piece of work, and you know, her work looks fabulous. So it's just lovely to be married to an artist who you know, creates this. Yeah. Yeah. Substantial visual world that has helped me to see things differently.
Yeah. Well, it's probably helped you with your poetry as well, I'd
imagine.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. Yeah, with writing, with seeing the world, with colours. You know, I was partially colourblind, and, you know, she'd say, get that red pot over there, and I'd bring the brown pot over.
That's close. He's red in brown, so that's close.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful, Boat.
So, a good weekend. Absolutely. And I had a poetry night too as well, and I read a piece of work, and it was all very well received. So, Rich,
thank you for the question.
My bucket's full.
Great stuff.
Wow.
Well, speaking of filling buckets, our guest today is Pam Khan from Rotary, Blacktown City, and they're doing their first annual... Winter Solstice, which of course we've been talking about on the show for the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is going to be 4:30 p.m. 21st of June. That's this Thursday. Thursday week. Wednesday night week. Let's get that right, Bradley. That's the second time I've said that today. Pam, welcome.
Thank you.
It was we met each other at a breakfast down at Campbelltown, was it? Camden or Campbelltown?
Yeah, down in the MacArthur region.
That's right. And I think we had a couple of Chardonnay champers before we kicked off. I can't remember the last time. I'm not a big drinker, but the last time I had a champagne at 10:30 in the morning or whatever it was.
It's a way to start the day.
That's right. It made us loquacious.
Loquacious. Wonderful word, isn't it?
Very clever when he comes. How are you, Pam?
Very well, thanks, and really lovely to be here. Thank you so much for including us in your program and giving us the airplay that you've given us.
No problem.
Yeah, the Rotary Club of Blacktown City is just starting on this year. It's our inaugural event, And we're hoping to do this every winter solstice.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about it, because this is what sort of drew me to inviting you on the show.
It's certainly not our brainchild. Yeah. I saw a show on Compass last year about a couple in Albury, and that's Annette and Stuart Baker, who lost their daughter 15, to suicide. Yeah, 15-year-old daughter to suicide. And they started bringing the community together on the evening of the winter solstice, which, of course, is the longest night of the year with the longest, darkest hours. And it just brings us together shoulder to shoulder to show us that there, even though it's dark and those hours of darkness are deep for some, that there is hope. The sun will come up tomorrow and there is a lot of community support for them out there. But it just brings us together to reminisce and honour those lives that we have lost. The figures are staggering when you start looking into suicide in Australia.
Sure, absolutely.
65,000 Australians attempted suicide last year.
Wow. That's a town full, isn't it?
That still gives me goosebumps when I say it.
We're losing seven men a day as well. You know, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
We've got some of the highest figures in the world for
male
suicide.
It has. We had a chap on the other week, W.D. Huey, who came on, Aaron W.D. Huey. He's a coach for the tradies. And he said that 60% or something of tradesmen account for men's suicide. So the tradesmen, they've worked, obviously, you know, it's phenomenal. And these are astonishing statistics, but... to hear you say that, how it brings us together and we can stand around the campfire and that sense of community gives us that overwhelming sense of belonging once again, of course, which is something that we fall into, as I have done in the past, of when we feel like, you know, things are too tough.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just to remind people that there's a lot of community support out there. Yeah. We're not good at asking for it. Right? We're not good at asking for it. And a lot of times we're not aware of the resources that are in our own community. So we're having a lot of those people come to our event on that Wednesday night and just set up a little booth around the showground at Blacktown and around the fires and just be there. Be there to show people that they are there for them if they need to reach out and need to talk to anybody.
Terrific. That's awesome.
We're pretty lucky in the Blacktown Rotary. We've got a gentleman by the name of Gary Raymond, who some of your listeners would know very well as a retired police superintendent. And he's a police chaplain and trauma counsellor. And he's set up and he's set up a program called SMIT, which is a 6-minute intervention training for suicide prevention.
Oh, okay. Terrific.
And so we'll be running that on the night as well. Gary will get up and be telling people about that.
It must be something with Gary and the coppers. Sorry, Pam. We've got a local, our chief inspector here, Gary Sims, who's the Are You OK ambassador. So isn't that terrific that he's doing that after so many years of service?
They've got a lot of work to do with first responders.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have a local paramedic who comes on. We try and get him on at least once a month, don't we, Christian? Yeah, yeah. He's an incredible man, and he... you know, I think after what happened with Stephen Tuffer down there at Campbelltown. And fortunately, you know, when he was killed, he did a 10-hour shift, Christian. This is the local paramedic here. And he went straight from here down there to do one of Stephen's shifts. So the whole station shut down.
Yeah.
You know.
That's been a mate.
It's being a mate. Well, that's exactly
right.
That's been a mate.
That's been a mate to his comrades. And to his team.
Yeah. Even though, you know, he probably doesn't know many people down there. It's the fraternity of being a paramedic, a police officer, or a first responder.
And it's the same with the fireys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Look at our rural fire service and look at what they see when they're in action.
Yes.
You know, and they've got to go home and deal with that later.
That's right.
Right? So we'll be having a lot of them.
Terrific.
On site on the night.
Wow.
And just bringing them all together and, offering them a venue and a night of shoulder to shoulder and terrific. Support. So we're hoping that everybody understands it's free and anybody can come along.
Awesome. It'll be a wonderful night for the family, I think. And can you bring your dog as well, or a little puppy?
Exactly.
It'd be wonderful.
Yeah,
I think it's terrific.
There'll be warm food for sale there, but there'll be some amazing speakers. I don't know if you've heard of Nick Newling.
Nick's been on our show.
Well, Nick's going to be one of the speakers on the night, so I don't have to tell you how moving Nick's story is. Yeah. And this is about storytelling and just sharing our experiences. So Nick's coming on the night.
You're a wonderful man, Nick, and speaks very, very well. Has done some terrific things and gone so many places. since the awful tragedy of his brother.
Yeah, so people will get to hear Nick's story and another lady by the name of Di Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah, who set up Walk for Hope.
Wow.
She's a mother of six children. She just lives in the Hawkesbury region.
Okay.
She had a little girl she lost to SIDS, and she's lost two sons to suicide.
Wow. Oh, no.
Gee.
Oh, my God.
What a brief journey there,
right? Yeah, Di has a story that she's going to share with us on the night. Yeah, and we're going to intersperse those pretty moving stories with some entertainment, so... So, yeah, hopefully it's an uplifting night as well as a comforting night of reminiscing for people.
I always find that, you know, when I go to events or nights for mental health, there's always that sense of, you know, oh, what am I going to listen to tonight? But you come away so much richer, so much more motivated, I guess, and hearing the diversity of the stories from the people that speak. And you hear it, as you mentioned, from people like first responders, people that have lost siblings or parents, whoever, and just the richness that you bring out of that or you receive from it all is wonderful. It's very cathartic, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's terrific.
Yeah, so the Rotary Club of Blacktown City's had a bit to do with mental health support, and that's where this idea has come from, following on from what Annette and Stuart have done in Albury, knowing that in our community there's so much need for support for suicide. Look at, you've only got to look at students about to do the HSC this year.
That's right.
And know the trauma that they go through and the anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thought pressure. And the thoughts that some of them have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we want them to know that there's support there for them, that they don't have to go into that darkness.
Yeah.
I think it's such an interesting discussion we're having. We're sort of, you know, rubbing at the edges of what support is and why it's so necessary, and why at some level we are a species that's very fragile, and support goes with fragility, and support goes with encouragement, and support goes with celebration. You know, all those things are crucial, and without support, our potential can never be fully reached. If we're terribly on our alone, we can fall prey to doubts about whether or not we can succeed. And when we have people who are supporting us, are affirming us, then that is additional supports that you use to actually achieve your goals. So that kind of idea of the community and the individual as inseparable realities. We're not individuals on our own, and we're not just a gaggle of people hanging out together. You were also talking about stories, Pam. You mentioned the word stories, how stories are important. I read a lovely quote from a guy's name has temporarily disappeared into the ether, but the quote was, stories are to be shared not for our analysis, but for joining us together more deeply.
Not for our analysis.
It's not for analysis and to extrapolate facts and all that sort of stuff. They're there to bring us closer together. You know, it's a joining thing. And that's what stories always do, is that they remind us of the bigger picture of all the lives that make up a community. And if stories are denied, then people fall prey to, I don't really exist. And that's when that kind of self-doubt can start to become problematic and then harden into nobody will notice I'm gone.
Sure.
So it creates a connection.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It gives you that sense of you're not alone. And, you know, it's like the times I've been to rehab where, you know, you go in there and you're at your darkest moments and you've not spoken to anyone, the phone's been off, or, you know, and when you get in there, the first thing they try and do is get you to interact into the groups.
Absolutely.
And with other people to get talk. And it's only within a couple of days that you're up and running again. And I think that's so important, because we become recluse when we become depressed. We do, you know, shut ourselves off from the world, or
we disconnect.
Particularly with the young teenagers and their games and, you know, lack of sleep. And so all these things that we seem to do, and the first thing we're doing is getting that sense of belonging. Absolutely. Yeah. Good point, Bates. Yeah.
So it's Men's Health Week this week.
No, I think it's International. Is it Men's? I could be wrong. I should have done some.
Well, it was in my diary. Men's Health Week.
It could be an international. I thought there was one. I get one confused. You think I should know, wouldn't you? Is it
constantly learning.
We're talking about Gary, the police officer. He said something extremely funny once. He came in. And I said, I think the greatest thing in life is mistakes, you know, because you get to learn so much from them. He said, not if we're making the same ones over and over again, Bradley.
Oops. Gotcha.
I think that's when I tend to make the most. So, Pam, how long, first of all, you've been involved with Rotary? What made you, I guess, take the steps of getting involved and... what has it brought to you? What's it done for you?
Brad, it was because I was a Rotary child.
Okay.
My dad was in Rotary. Okay. So he joined Blacktown Rotary in the early 60s. He was a local business person.
All right.
And he was very much involved in giving back to the community that was providing him with his lifestyle.
Sure.
And his income. So he was a giver.
Yeah.
And he was giving back. And he saw that as an avenue
of mixing
with like-minded people.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so as a child, I was always roped into all the different functions. You know, I remember walking 20 kilometres back in the 1960s to raise money for the Police Citizens Youth Club to be built in Blacktown.
Wow. Still going too,
and
isn't it? Yeah.
And just different events like that Rotary Club has held. It's always been a very active club.
Yeah.
And as a child, I was involved in that. And it wasn't till in the early 2000s that I was actually invited to join. Women weren't always in Rotary. Rotary was set up over 100 years ago.
Yeah, it was kind of like the Masons, wasn't it? You know, just a moment. Come on in, Robert.
It was set up in Chicago by a gentleman by the name of Paul Harris, who just brought different individuals together from different engagements of employment.
Okay.
So that it didn't become a boys' club for lawyers or a boys' club for mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a representative from every employment and industry in the area, and they each bring something different to the pot.
Sure.
And that was the theme of it, to do good in the community. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But women were introduced in the early 90s.
Was it that late, was it?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I didn't join until about 2004, 2005.
That's probably why it's been so organised since the 90s, hasn't it?
Sure.
They do say that it changed when women joined and got better, of course.
It would have.
But, so I'm very, very lucky to have some wonderful women in our club as well who are just passionate.
Yeah.
They're passionate about their community and giving back to their community in different ways.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Talk to me about the laptop, the discussion we were having before. This is a terrific story because...
All right, this isn't so much about mental health. It's an education program that our club is involved in.
Well, I think it does involve it in a sense.
All right,
anyway,
and it's about e-waste. We take donated laptops. Most people have a laptop in the wardrobe these days because they've updated it.
Yeah.
We take donated laptops, strip them down and upload 50,000 educational videos and storybooks in different languages. Mm. And we attach a little router to that laptop. And with that router, we create a local area network.
Mm.
So within 100 metres of the laptop, anybody with a Wi-Fi-enabled device can tap into the electronic library that we've created in that laptop.
Wow. So it's fantastic for things like schools.
Oh, brilliant for remote schools.
Yeah.
Not so much in Australia. They don't embrace it so much in our remote areas because we have the internet. But there are so many countries in the world that don't have the internet or it's expensive or unreliable or just not available due to their topography.
Yeah.
You know, the school or the village might be in a valley and they can't get
any
signal.
Yeah, well, you're talking about being in Tanzania.
Yes. I was in Tanzania in 2018 at little remote schools out there at the base of Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
They don't have the internet out there.
No.
But to give them a laptop in a school, a small school like that, and each teacher, if they have a Wi-Fi device, and that particular school we were talking about, Brad, had donated laptops to each teacher.
Yeah.
They could then hook in to the laptop which is in the principal's office and they can then access everything in that electronic library for their students. And that's resources from little kindergarten kids right through to university physics.
Mm.
And there's a lot of agricultural programs and a medical library in there as well for villages that don't have doctors.
Yeah, isn't that terrific? It's just wonderful that we can... you know, I guess we do kind of take advantage, and we sort of think today, like, oh, it's 2023, we should be having this everywhere, you know?
Yeah, so this is our Teacher in a Box program, and as at today, we've got them deployed in 23 different countries.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Kudos, well done.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just another interest our club has got and passion we've got. It's just making a difference.
It's terrific, isn't it?
Oh, it is terrific because, you know, it's what makes the community sort of vibrant and active and visible, isn't it, when we're doing the things together in this way. And, you know, that's that is ultimately a celebration of our communal strength and how incredibly important that is. And I guess one of the things about the COVID time is that we were sort of often in our own resources. People locked down for considerable periods of time. Number of fathers and mothers who tell me that their children suffered terribly during the COVID lockdown because they were at home, you know, on a screen, the natural meeting of networks and friends in the classroom didn't happen.
Sports and all of the things they missed out on.
Well, they were disconnected again. They were disconnected.
Right. And this daughter said to her dad, COVID, you know, she used extravagant language, so which I can't repeat here through the mic. Yeah. But I was robbed. I was robbed of my childhood by that COVID experience. Excuse me. And I you know, that's and that's had a deep effect. So losses. So coming back together again and being able to interact with each other restores that sense of engagement. One of the things I'm profoundly grateful for is that during the COVID time, I was able to be in the natural world. And, you know, that wasn't shut down to us, at least.
No.
I could go for a walk in the bush and sit by my favourite waterfall and, you know, watch the bird life and, you know, the view and let my imagination soar among the soughing trees, you know, in the in a rock place that I sort of have made my own. So that... those restorative things that community provide, and you're talking about Rotary, what a gift, if you like, to Blacktown that Rotary exists, because it's one of the landmarks of our community life, and that's why they're so important, and that's why we need to continue being visible and talking to each other, and that's why that's so good for mental health and well-being. You know, without those things, our life disintegrates. And what's really interesting, we're all talking about the interest rates and the, you know, the, we get sort of hooked into narratives that really don't mean that much to our well-being at some level. I think we've lost sight of what's most important, and we can get distracted by sideshows. So I love the sense of the community and its function and its profile and its existence. And without it, you know, it's like those new communities or subdivisions that open up, and there's no facilities. It's just a row and row and row of houses and streets.
Jordan Springs down in Penrith, I was there.
And I drive through those places. I think, where's the cultural life?
Where's the character?
Where are people? Where's the party? Where's celebration?
That's why
they're on their devices. Yeah, so absolutely, we're trapped now into our devices, and that's our world. But it's just digital. It's just noughts and ones. That's all it is. Let's not actually lose sight of the real interface between people, actually face-to-face, body-to-body, proximity-to-proximity, and listening and talking towards each other, and find the themes that unite us rather than the themes that divide us. And, you know, those things are crucial to well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. Pam, I beg your pardon, was saying that before we came in.
You know, okay.
It's getting people back in the moment.
Yeah.
It's you know, cutting off other things and just starting to realise what's around you.
Yes.
What surrounds you. And terrific points.
I want to do a shout out to Wendy Farrell Whelan. She's passed away, and it's her funeral today, actually. She was a wonderful community worker and grief counsellor for the mountains for you know, 20, 30 years. A source of great wisdom. Sadly, an illness has taken her. But what a wonderful lady, and now an ancestor, but she left a great gift to many people. So, well done, Wendy.
Yeah. That sense of, as we mentioned, you know, belonging or getting out there, getting involved in groups, it's one of the things that I guess helped me enormously getting through that period of 2014-15. I didn't socialise a lot, you know. I became recluse. I moved from a very social life of the Northern Beaches to the Blue Mountains. It took me some time to adjust to that. However, the one thing that I did notice immediately was the approach of people and the difference. And perhaps I did have that there in many places in the Northern Beaches with my kids' sports and with my own sports. Mm. But of course, you know, I found as a man in his late 30s or at the time that ego, I guess, it comes into it. But that sense of pride is so, you know, the most powerful thing for me at the time was. And I didn't want to be seen as weak. So to meet a couple of people up here, and one chap I did a show with before this, Andrew Wilson, you know, and he had some physical issues. He was a big boy, and he's worked very hard to get his weight down, you know. But it became, you know, at one stage we're having a walk and we're having a chat, you know. It could just be so easy just to stay stagnant in that life. You know, he could have continued down the path of where he was, as I could have. But I think, like, communities of, or things like Gotcha for Life, where you have a buddy where you can have a chat to for life and talk about things that you wouldn't normally do. Some people find it difficult to talk to family members and have that interaction. And I think having something like this, what you're doing with the Winter Solstice, is a perfect opportunity to meet other people that are in your community that are living similar issues or patterns in their life, you know, and to come out of there or to, you know, understand the simple things in life like that.
I think what you're saying too is that you tend to isolate when you are in that pain and you are in that darkness. You tend to isolate.
Yeah.
Whereas instead of when you can connect and there's a more of a sense of belonging, isn't it?
Yeah.
Belonging to family, belonging to community, and belonging.
It's one of the things I did. A chap called me from Newport to say, we spoke about this last week, that a young man was taken from the edge of the cliff. He was saved, thankfully, and I ended up having a chat to his mum and been talking to his mum for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And just the last thing that she felt her son could get involved in was getting to groups or to a men's walk. And I said, look, that's going to happen in time, but what we need to understand is we need a good idea to get your son with other boys of his age or similar, or just with men. And to understand that he's not alone, you
connecting.
Know, it's so important, and that's happening. And you know, it's taken 3 or 4 weeks, which is a pretty quick amount of time. And I think there's some massive changes that the young fellas had, you know, when he was just one step away. So, yeah, so crucially important. Just going to take a quick break here on the Men's Mental Health Show. It's coming up to, well, it's just after 11:30, and 89.1 RBM FM. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Radio Blue Mountains, broadcasting across the Blue Mountains on 89.1 FM and streaming live across Australia and beyond via the World Wide Web on www.rbm.org.au.
We're just talking about, you know, during the break of the terrible tragedy, of course, that happened on Saturday evening in the Hunter Valley. Just dreadful. And so many of us have been up to the Hunter. I've got some friends just around the corner, really, from there. And the ripple effect that that's going to have on the community as a whole is astonishing. And we talk about events like what's going on next Wednesday for the Winter Solstice down at Blacktown Showground that you're doing, Pam. But this is a prime example of the things that we need to come together with. You know, the first thing you mentioned was the first responders. I think they were in their early 20s.
Two
paramedics that first turned up. Of course, no doubt they'd know some of the people.
I don't know them, of course, but if you think of them as being local people, and the people on that bus were local people,
yes.
And if they then come to a scene where they're recognising people they know, hopefully not family members, but just, you know, knowing the people that they're trying to pull out of a wreck like that,
It's something they won't ever get over. It'll be with them.
That's right. And that's why we need to support these people.
That's right.
And the trauma that they're feeling in an event like that. They're just doing their job. They're trained to do it. But the personal pain and trauma of that, we have to support all of those first responders.
I don't think training is enough in terms of tragedy like that's unfolded with that bus falling over. You know, the number of people that actually died in that and then severely injured. And at some level, we don't really fully appreciate how much grief, how long it lingers. In my practice as a psychotherapist and a grief counsellor, the griefs that have belonged to childhood still keep showing up as having inhibiting effects on well-being in a person's life.
Yes.
We're talking about an event that may have happened 40 years ago.
Mm.
So, and we're not that skillful at recognizing that in our grief stories there is a need, but there's also a learning. But to sit in that and to actually fully extract an understanding of what it is to be human requires us to have far more courage in sitting in the difficulties. And that's why the idea of community and support is so crucial to making sense of these events. Because if we don't address them, I can tell you that they become tyrannous later on in life. Either they show up in very difficult dreams or a person has a very short fuse and is unable to manage, to self-regulate because the grief story requires so much oxygen or so much mental effort to actually sort of kind of avoid that the resources are compromised by that. So attending to a grief story is really crucial. And I think this community and the first responders have a body of work to do to be able to return back to a place not that once forgotten, but that one accepts that this is the nature of existence and we've all got to find our way through this stuff. Now, there's some reality of existence like rage that I talked to in my poem. You know, we don't have to accept that. That's not a given. You know, we can really start to make some significant shifts in challenging anger or rage or domestic violence, all those, and warmongering, all that sort of stuff that we think is normal. I think we have to rethink what is normal, what is reasonable. And there is no such thing as normal, really. But there is a way of finding our deeper angels and bring them into our story. Funny word for me to use, angels. But I think it's those parts of us that see the best in all of us and in ourselves. And that's what we bring to our interactions, to our relationships.
Terrific point. You mentioned at the beginning, it's sometimes training isn't enough. It is those normal, instinct human interactions that we have that need to come to the forefront, that we need to, you know, it's like so many things, like topics of racism or DV as you mentioned, rage, PTSD, so many issues mental health-wise that have, with many professionals or therapists such as yourself, that all agree that talking about it is the first thing to help you overcome or to deal with it. I guess the more that discussion is, of course, you've got to be comfortable, and trust is an enormous thing as well.
Sure.
But to have those discussions about something that's so incredibly confronting is not an easy thing, and it may be one of the hardest things that you ever have to do.
Yeah.
But it gets easier. Does it go away? I don't think so. I don't think it'll ever go away.
It doesn't ever go away, but you have a capacity to understand all the nuances of your story and how it has grown you as a person. So the event has changed you, but can only change you if you do the work of integration, of exploration, of unpacking it. what the, a lot of people sort of in face of trauma fall into an idea of idealization or of self-soothing, the wound, and that doesn't yield its treasure either. Our reticence about seeking help or seeking a therapeutic environment in which we can make sense of something, and we're not required to be normal or available. You know, that's what a good therapy space can provide,
yes,
is that you're genuinely yourself. And all those parts of you that you're a little bit discomforted by, you know, can be examined. You know, one can hear the frame or the gestalt of a part. And say, wow, I had no idea that this part is so hurting or is so enraged or is so full of doubt. You know,
or is such a big part of me.
It's absolutely a big part of you. And that's the marvelous freedom when those spaces are provided. Because most of us have to, in a sense, sacrifice our real feelings in order to fit in. And that what that does, fitting in, what that does is it provides a means by which we can have connection.
Sure.
But it also means that those undeveloped parts can never come home or be integrated because we're so upset by our aspects that are uncomfortable, like bursts of rage or rage is part of our human story, but one can work with rage. One can actually begin to obtain some self. You hear the destructive tenor of rage and go, "Wow,
yeah,
is that how I sounded?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't kind of feel that good because I feel out of control. I want to bring a bigger part of me to the community rather than that sort of, you know, rage demon that I've got inside of me that I work so hard
to. It's a big word, that control, isn't it? You know, that lack or sense of losing that self.
Yes, and it is. You do lose face when your regulatory ability to regulate very difficult material, very difficult emotion. there's a beautiful poem by Les Murray, and it's about the man that just started weeping.
Right.
Now, Les Murray is a very interesting poet, a man of words and letters beyond parallel. And some of his poetry is dense and very difficult to understand. But this particular poem that he wrote was about a man who began to weep. Uh-huh. And what's really interesting, in the main street, and what's really interesting is the effect it had on everybody around. And people really began to actually get close to this weeping. It became a gossip in the community. Hey, there's a guy in the main street and he's just weeping. And people would say, what's wrong? And he would just weep. And then after about two pages of the poem, the man dries his tears and says, thank you, everybody, for just being there. And he walks away. It's just that beautiful acceptance of weeping, because sometimes there's a time to weep. You know, one of the great.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a time to sow. There's a time to celebrate. There's a time to nurse a wound by yourself. There's, you know, we all have a weeping time, it's for us who are muscled up. I must sound like a blathering idiot, you know, when I talk like that. There's a time we have to let down. I worked with a man once who. You know, was a very competent businessman, traveled the world, pulling deals off, blah, blah, blah. But he was armored up. He was really a product of his training. And what he carried was a secret in his heart about, as a six-year-old, being seduced by an older aunt. And that seduction occurred until he was 18.
Wow.
One day it hit him. You know, like it broke through his armoring and hit him, and he just wept and wept and wept, and then began his healing work. So for people who are unused to that idea of unburdening, to hear me talk about it, they go, well, I'm not doing that.
No.
No, that's not me. You know, I'm tough. I'll, you know, when the tough gets going, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Yeah. You know, I mean, I love it. I mean, I instinctively go, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's not a cure for everything.
No.
And sometimes we have to unburden.
I think it's also too, we talk about it many times, about that toolkit, that mental health toolkit. It's it's being able to understand or develop new skills, you know, surrounding your triggers or those things that might make you turn inward or recluse. I think, you know, doing things like with Rotary and bringing those people together helps you get a better understanding of what other people are using in their toolkit. Well, if you're around other people that have PTSD issues, maybe that works for them. I might give that a try. And I think that's when we see such tragedy. This is the only area where I get a little bit annoyed, where I guess when in the media we talk about suicide, I think it's wonderful we give out Lifeline's number or other like entities. But I think it's a good idea to perhaps put in there, like we're doing with the gambling ads, what's it really costing you? You might win once, but you will overall lose all the time. Why can't we do that with some of the mental health stuff? Like, make that call to that friend that you're thinking about right now.
Give them that message.
Give them that message.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or give them that love, all that assurity,
most
of all that trust. And these are some of the things that I think that we could be doing that are proactive. And when I hear, you know, you talk all the time, you make so much sense, Bodhi. It does, but these are some of the things that, well, I guess, what can we do in the face of tragedy? You know, it's not something that no one likes to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it takes up so much of the time of what's happening or conversation. So start putting some things in place, making that call to that. It might be someone you haven't spoken in your family for some time.
Could be just an awareness of what organisations are there at your doorstep, at your fingertips.
Mm.
Yeah, it may not be the Lifeline phone number, but there are other people in the community that you can reach out to.
Well said, guys. But there's so many wonderful things come, I guess, you know, in the face of tragedy. You talk about the bakers down at Albury for what you're doing.
Mm.
The show wouldn't have come about if it weren't for a big tragedy or something near tragic. So, and I guess to me, that's what I've found for me is the key to life or to reaching that sense of self happiness or care or love for self is what I can do for others gives me that sense of achievement, gives me that sense of purpose. No doubt what both of you guys do and Bodhi in your practice and what you're doing for your role with Rotary. So maybe look at that. If you're finding it difficult for yourself to get yourself happy, try and give something to someone else. And you find, you know, the power that comes with that. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
The volunteers always tell me, and I would...
You've done a lot of volunteer work. Let's not forget, Bates.
Yes, I'm getting something out of it, absolutely. But I supervise, you know, volunteers for palliative care. And the volunteers always talk about how much they have grown, not only from the training, but also in the meetings, in the work itself, in the supervision that we've provided to give them a chance to understand what it is that they are bringing to the table as a volunteer to someone who's dying.
It's often said to receive, you have to give.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And they always say that what I give is nothing to what I receive. There's a rich harvest that I obtain from my giving of my time. Look, anybody who's got a few hours to burn or an interest in doing volunteering, you are such a resource to your community and whatever niche that you find in order to do the volunteer work, it's making an enormous difference. and highly encouraging of volunteering for sure.
There's so many avenues in our community where people can volunteer.
Yep, absolutely.
The thing is not to volunteer in something that doesn't give you something back.
Yes.
To volunteer in something that is a passion.
Yes.
Like whether it be palliative care, whether it be rescuing animals, whether it be working with with children or First Nations people.
Sure. Yes.
Right? It's whatever connects with you.
Yes.
Yeah, that will give you heart stories in
absolutely.
Return.
Sure.
And Maurice Swartz is an author, a sociologist and a therapist. He's just written a book on ageing. And he says one of the things that really grows your ageing journey is to start to do things that you have always feared. So volunteer
about,
in an area in
that's,
which...
That's you all over. I talk about this. I do. I talk about your ability to be able to get somebody to sit in their shit, excuse me, to sit in that discomfort, those moments in life which are so incredibly difficult. To not say anything, it's a huge skill. And that's what, I guess, Murray's saying as well, isn't it?
Yes.
To sit in that discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the power that comes with it.
And the power that comes with it. Mm. Yeah, yeah. That you become aware that you're a bigger vessel than you ever thought.
Yeah.
Facing the fear. Isn't it? Facing the fear, as you
said. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
I was watching something on the weekend, I think a group of guys, and there was like four of them, and they just all went out and faced their fears. Now, one of them liked to surf, I think, but didn't like surfing big waves. So his three mates, a bit of peer group pressure here, forced him into it. Another guy, they
encouraged him, shall we say.
Yeah, that's a good one. I need you more often on here, Pam, I think. And another one, they took up, I can't remember whether it was, I don't know, the Kakadu or something. They put him on the helicopter and they put him on the end seat. And you see him the whole time with his no door on the helicopter. They're obviously strapped in.
Yeah.
But he's hanging on for dear life. Like, you know.
It's white knuckle stuff.
It's white knuckle. Yeah. It's exactly the words. And, you know, it was the Bondi lifeguards.
Oh, yes.
So it was the Bondi lifeguards. And that... I thought it was wonderful. I mean, what a terrific bunch of guys and fraternity these fellas are.
Tough macho-looking men.
And they are. Yeah. They are tough macho-looking men. And to see them at their absolute most vulnerable state, being shit scared, excuse my French to the listeners, but, you know, that's facing that fear. And that's showing you these big men or these guys that save lives every day. It's showing you how real they are. You know, we think we look at them on the TV, oh, my God, these guys are incredible. It's probably our best exported show, too, just quietly. It's massive around the world, Bondi Rescue. But to see them like that, isn't it? And it's wonderful to see those men literally shaking, crying, white knuckles, fear, you know, when that's what they've been doing for others. They think they're right on death's doorstep. Yeah,
that vulnerability is right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the key to any sort of mental health is being comfortable, particularly for men, to be comfortable in that vulnerability and what it feels like. Was essentially what Bodie and Murray have been saying. You know, it's terrific.
Shall I read the poem? Shall I
tell us about this poem? It's
I read it a bit of it last week.
Sure.
And I've grown it a bit and changed it around and that sort of stuff. So,
okay.
And in this poem, I think it attends to what we've been talking about today. But the last line owes a nod to John Keats, the poem, the poet, when he wrote what was the title of the poem? A Grecian Urn, Ode to a Grecian Urn, and he was examining this old urn with his painting on the urn. So I've borrowed the last line from that poem of his. Thank you, John. It's called Fragility. We, so fragile, life force gossamer thin, bound by one breath, moment to moment, we know of this. Yet our preference for conflict, missiles, death by stealth, our terrible refusal. The rage of threat bursts its banks in every crevice of human existence. A grown man in rage, losing words and compassion, bespittled his lost face, self-control derelict. decimated and skittled, all of us enslaved by rage too fearsome to bear, our daemon silenced and circled by cyclops, our imagination moribund, while our children crouch in fear, grief has laid them low, their lives stippled and marked by rage. Let us turn away from these past practices. Let us turn to a beauty wrought with tender, fragile hands that soothe, releasing an ardour for a deep stillness, a deep listening, a loving, gentled and perfumed to its core. Our epidemics of stress and trauma will start to wither. Our laughter will ring out again. Our joys scamper hither and thither. What fun and frolic. Our imagination, our daemon, into a world freed from rage and reason. We could bound out a Soren-styled leap into the arms of dreamers in elegant chant. I see you and you, so beautiful. Let's scatter love seeds, a ritual for ripening. Gather the children, their imaginations soaring, a flame of celebration in vanquishing that old dragon. The soothsayers mutter, he's dreaming. Another woke poet signaling virtue. Rage and regiment, our glorious past. The marching footsteps of resolute men stamping their wills on a victory parade. I can hear the custodians of normal opine reality has eluded him. He has lit a Dionysian bonfire. Taser his blither and blather. His cognitive dissonance is a threat to our curated narratives. I have no appetite for rage and its army of bleaters and believers. The spell broke as I stumbled on beauty, on the fragile blossom of human love. Commend an old-fashioned conversion. Ancient treasure awaits. That is all ye need on earth and all ye need to know. Thank you, John Keats.
What a gift you have.
He's very clever. It is a gift, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's very creative. He gets me thinking. Sometimes there'll be some things that he'll put in one of the stanzas of the poem, and I'm still thinking of that. I don't get to...
Takes you off.
Yeah, that's right. You know what I mean? And I think, what draws me to that is about that rage, that your poem wasn't coming through the ears, is, I guess, when in the face of tragedy, it's one of the first things we feel. Let's blame. There's a reason. Let's attack that. Let's get on top. Like the bus driver. Mm. Now, his life's over, really. He's never going to be. Neither will his wife or kids.
His family.
His family. Yeah. And we tend to forget that.
Yeah.
And that's... whether that's a natural thing for some of us with that rage or that blame, or and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, least of all person in the world that can judge as myself. But yeah, it speaks to the truth of what kindness and love can bring, and the change with that, and the soothing that can bring, and the easing of what the power of time is, of healing. Yeah, I like it, man. Really. I got lost in a couple of parts, and it wasn't your fault, as I said. But when you said something about aggression, what do you mean by that? At the beginning, you said something to the aggression. I don't understand. Were you meaning aggression or?
Look, I think all of us have a capacity for aggression. And it comes out in different ways. Like a man's rage can be very frightening because it's very physical, and the strength of a man, with his rage. Is highly destructive, in domestic violence situations, I sometimes work with children who are casualties of that, and they're often adult, but they have a child experience of domestic violence, there's a palpable fear of a male rage. But similarly, when a mother, men have got, there's double binds for all of us, for men and women, around rage, but it is a human reality. And I think what I'm asking in the poem is, can we take up the the burden of our individual rage and do some management of that, do some anger management, do some, you know, not bring that into our relational field. Do some work on it. We don't have to be solving problems through expressions of rage, or withdrawing from a relationship. Mm. Women often say to me, I get most hurt when my husband withdraws and he refuses to talk with me because he's upset by something.
And that's probably because...
And that's an expression of rage.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so many ways. But when a man says, look, I can't go here in this moment anymore. Mm. I'm exhausted. Can you just leave me alone? I need to be by myself.
Sure.
And she's continually hammering away at him. You know, that too is an aspect of not allowing a man to find his recovery. Mm. And then often things happen, you know, and go.
Sure.
So, you know,
it's like a switch, isn't it? It's like a mechanism that almost comes in. It certainly was for me with my levels of anger and rage. It would just come on because it was too difficult to deal with that conversation if we were to talk further about it, or the assumption of how that conversation would go. You know, I beg your pardon, got something on. Yeah, I'll turn that off. That's a phone call. But absolutely, you know. And the triggers that come with it from your partner.
Absolutely. Triggers come from all places, all sources.
Yeah.
And you know, a good piece of work is to know what one's triggers are and to understand the origins of those triggers, and to actually say, well, I don't have to be instinctively always reminded of old triggers.
Mm.
You know, I can have some anticipation of a trigger. Sure. I may be triggered in this situation, so let me be safe.
And learning how to react to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Learning a safe way to react to that trigger.
Skillful means, you know, developing skillful means in the face of old triggers and old arousal points is hugely an increase in well-being for everybody involved. It's creating safety.
Mm. Yeah. I think... You know, when we had Aaron on the other week, the tradie coach, right? There was a part of the discussion where he said something to the owner of the company. He said, "Oh, I don't really do that. I've got a pretty good understanding with, you know, my staff, but we'll invest so much money and time to learn new strategies, techniques towards business or success, but yet we're prepared, not so prepared." To invest that time, money, or whatever it is into our own skills or assets of life, of our own morals or our own ethics, or how can we change? How can we work on those things?
Yep.
Maybe I need to see a psychotherapist.
Yep.
Maybe I need to go and speak to these groups. Maybe I should turn up to the winter solstice, see some other people, hear about their tragedies, and understand how they're expressing themselves if I'm to change.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Improving their well-being.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I think if I was the community development,
improving their well-being, yeah,
absolutely,
well said. Yeah, if you were the community, you said.
If I was a community development worker in the Hunter, I'd be petitioning the mayor's office and would say, let's call a public meeting so we can all talk about this tragedy, and anybody who's got a memory of the people who have passed away,
tell us
your stories of those people. Let us do some community healing.
Let's not make this a one-off. This is every Thursday night, Tuesday.
Absolutely. Mm. And that gives a chance for the story and the grief to be attended to.
Sure. And these are some things that we can be doing ourselves in our own community or within.
And
our,
we've got to do our own work, of course,
with
of course.
Our own family.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with the kids.
Yeah,
you know, things get stagnant, as we know, in family relationships. Some person feels more pressure than the other. One of the kids is getting bullied, and we may notify that. And as a sibling, you sort of go, "Why does the older sister get all the attention? How come this is? You know, I'm missing out here." Well, the mere fact of the matter is, we're not discussing it. We're not having that meeting. We're not talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's the way forward. That's some of the stuff that I'd like to see when we talk about at the end of the news article, if you or anyone you know is struggling with mental health issues, call this number. I think we find it more proactive that we start saying things like, communicate, let's bond together, join a group, get involved, walk and talk. We know how much success walk and talk has had.
Yeah.
The introduction of... Well, it's not an introduction, but bringing together physical exercises so much easier for us as people to talk as a whole. that we're comfortable around. We know the successes of what therapy can do. We know that there is benefits in medicine or antidepressants. So we know that there are some, but if we weigh them up with all the three, what's more powerful? What's of more use? Some people find talking's of far more use than in a group or just with a therapist than using other ways. So, yeah, all these things we need to start to practice, I think, that we need to be doing. And because it's like so many things. It's like people say to me, I don't know what to say when my son says he doesn't want to live anymore. And it's the first question that comes to the front of everyone's mind is why? Is why? So...
And it's not really the question, is it? Because
it's not the question.
Because it implies that there's something wrong with you. So
it's a judgmental.
Yeah. And it's also a cover-up for our own confusion.
Sure.
Because we've got to come up with a solution. But unfortunately, if we only focus on solutions, we miss out growing our competencies to actually deal with the existing... with the realities of living, with the existential givens of living, which ultimately grow us. The wisdom journey of an older person is when they've done the work of integrating and understanding their journey and have become accomplished human beings who are eloquent in their talk, eloquent in their wisdom.
Grateful.
And the thing I keep saying to people, you don't have to endure on your own the unendurable. The thing that's too hard. You don't have to do that. Start
not on your own. Yeah.
No, you don't have to do that on your own. That's a recipe for overwhelm carrying a terrible burden. Or a pain body. You've got a pain body that you carry.
And then when it happens, we push it down and it goes down. And eventually it's a pressure cooker, isn't it? She's going to blow.
It becomes manifested in other things, doesn't it?
I ran a men's group for 12 years. And men signed up, undertook to spend 2 years in the group. And if they decided to leave before that time, they had to attend meetings for 4 weeks to talk about why they felt they needed to move on. So there was a bit of a safety valve for the group to let that person go and for that person to review the reasons why they think they should leave. In the group, I often would bring in a backpack and I'd sort of, shake it free and say, so let's look at what's in the backpack for the last week. The two hard stuff that we've been throwing in the backpack.
Well, you imagine if we bring our wives along to something like that and they empty the purse. Oh, no. We're going to be here all year. You know what I mean?
We're for a long session.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
Well, sometimes that's a TARDIS.
It's a TARDIS. That's exactly right. Hey, g'day, Craig, mate. You know what the TARDIS is, mate? Yeah, we talk about a TARDIS, about something else. But I think that's... that's really the essence, isn't it? Unleashing that backpack or knowing that you can do this not alone, that you can do that with someone like yourself. Incidentally, I haven't given you a number today. Let's see if I remember it without looking. I'm 0424-416-969. That's Bodie's
Absolutely.
Number. 0424-416-969. Bodie's in Wentworth Falls. You can come and see him face to face. He does Zoom or Skype. So, take it up. It's some wonderful, wonderful life experiences that Bodie's seen. It's some terrific stories, but more importantly, he's a big help. Utilise that service. But, I think, we've covered quite a bit today, haven't we? We're only 10 past 12, and we've gotten through quite an amount. We're here with Pam Carr from Rotary Blacktown, of course, for the winter solstice, which is next Wednesday night. At 4:30 p.m. it starts on the 21st of June at Blacktown Showground. There'll be a lot of things to do. It's not just about getting the community together. It's about bringing families together, friends, and plenty of food and warm fires. And
entertainment.
And some entertainment. Terrific. What are you singing for us, Pam?
Not I. Don't worry.
Okay.
don't try and put people off by telling them I'm singing.
Oh, okay. No. Okay.
Now, Pam, what did you get from that poem? What left out? What image or line or... word.
I think the fragility.
Okay.
I think the fragility of it struck me by the ear.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Lovely. Well, that's a title, and I think for me, what's the shift for me is is loving fragility. You know, my own fragilities as a 30-year-old, nah, no way. Yeah. You know, I was buttoned up and working hard to put on a brave face on anything and everything.
Yeah.
But now, in my own fragilities and others, it's such an opening to something. It's an opportunity to talk, to step away from an idea of there's nothing else for me to learn. I've got it all, you know.
So when you say that, it just brings me to what you do with people in palliative care that are coming to the end of their lives.
Yes.
To sit with them in that, you know, discomfort. It's always something that's on everyone's forefront of the mind. Death.
One of our volunteers, Terry, he's sat with a man who wasn't really accustomed to talking.
Mm.
Wow, what a bromance developed.
Oh, really?
The client just absolutely loved Terry and couldn't wait for Terry to arrive at the designated time.
Wow.
And they'll go into these really, really deep talks. And the wife said to him one day, you are such a treasure. You have made such a difference to my husband as he undergoes this huge transition
from
his dying time.
Yeah.
And he's got so much. You've soothed him with your willingness to listen and to offer what you have learned in your journey.
Obviously a safe space. Obviously
really a safe space.
A safe space for him.
Yep, absolutely.
My uncle's terminal at the moment. I've been to see a couple of times and I'll go again this week if I can. Or actually, it'll be next week. And my mum's brother it is, and her sister and husband came over from New Zealand. And we also spoke to their younger sister who lives in Hawaii. Actually, I think they're over in New Zealand. They've got a place down the South Island there as well. But what it does is they're bringing us all together. However, it was very difficult for us as the family to talk about it. Found it a lot easier to talk to my Uncle Jeff when it was just him and I.
Mm,
but of course, we don't want to talk about it. A wonderful thing that I love about it is because I love hearing my mum talk about her childhood. You know, my mum was a real tomboy when she played rugby with the local people down there in Palmerston North and never wore shoes and came home with skin missing from her elbows and her knees and the odd black eye, you know, from a high tackle or whatever. I just love hearing some of those stories, and then to hear a sister and a brother talk about it as well is wonderful. But I could see in Jeff and my uncle's eyes the fear and the enormous amount of fear he has. So the fact of, I think the only best way for him to talk is to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's very sad when you see such a big man who's slowly fading away. And that's going to happen to us all, obviously. We're going to lose our mum and dad or my cousin's place, his father. And that's awful.
Grief and that loss, you can see on their faces now.
You can. But, you know, again, from it, there's an opportunity there to get an understanding of grief or death and acceptance, things we can grow from.
Absolutely.
You know?
And as they talk about so often, is celebrating that life.
It's a celebration of the life, exactly. There's so many people now that are, I guess, in a situation and they're saying, let's do the funeral before I go. These wonderful things.
I'll just share quickly with you. I went to a 90th birthday on Saturday night and we all had to wear something gold.
Right.
That was the theme of the night, was wearing something gold.
Right.
And the family, as family members, MC, said, we wanted to do this because we don't want to all get together as a family and relatives and friends in blackness and wearing black. That is another stage.
Sure.
But we want to remind you all that wearing gold and sparkling is a celebration of our lives.
Yeah.
And
it's very wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, because this 90-year-old was up doing the chicken dance, I can tell you.
Oh, really?
The chicken dance and the time warp and the nut bush.
Oh, really?
Wow. This 90-year-old's doing the nut bush. So, yes, celebration is absolutely the theme of the night.
Wonderful. Terrific idea. Wonderful. Well, we might come to the end of the show, guys, and wrap things up. Are you off to Wendy's funeral or did you miss it today?
Unfortunately. But I will talk with Michael, her husband.
Sure.
Good.
Good on you, man.
Unfortunately, I've got other things that...
Pam, I really appreciate you making the trip all the way up here from Where did you say you're from?
Oakville.
Oakville. I did have it. I was close. It's a lovely part of the world down there. You know, being down there at Picton Way, and yeah, I went down there to see somebody a couple of years ago, and I went down every week for so, and I got lost the first time getting there. Of course, yeah. How do you get lost these days when you've got Navigator? Yeah, I did. But then I thought, oh, it wouldn't be wonderful to live down here. The space and the surrounds, the greenery, the quietness. Yeah, yeah. And I guess we've got that up here in the life. But
no, it was a lovely trip up. It was a lovely morning to come up to the mountains. So thanks so much for giving us this space.
Well, I think it's our pleasure. That's what we love doing here. But I think kudos to yourself and to Rotary Blacktown for doing this. You know, anything that we can and should be really doing as a community towards suicide prevention and mental health awareness is huge kudos to you. Yeah, cheers. And it was lovely to see you again.
Thank you, Brad, so much. And so nice to meet you too, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a men's mental health show. Don't forget, give Bodie a call on 0424 416969. The winter solstice, of course, that we've been talking about with Pam is 4:30 next Wednesday, 21st of June, Blacktown Showground. And I think that'll probably go up to around 9, maybe a little later at night. But get along if you can. Big thanks to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour high in the manufacturing industry. Give Craig a call on 0416 700 870. Plenty of jobs out there at the moment as well. So if you need somebody that, or know somebody that's storming, we're looking for welders, we're looking for mechanical engineers, fitters, CNC machinists, all of the stuff that help drive our economy.
Yep.
Might help give our interest rates down too if we get some more people out there working. So give us a call and hopefully we can help out. And a big thanks to Dale Hunt and Mounties Group. 89.1 RBM FM. Big thanks to you guys as well. And we'll be back next week at the same time of 11 a.m. here on 89.1. Thanks very much, guys.